Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast of the Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. I'm David Bowes, your host. In part one of this two-part podcast, we talked with Center for Science and Culture fellow Dr. Richard Weikert about challenges made to his work linking Darwinist theory and the Nazis in the Philadelphia Inquirer's blog on evolution news, the Planet of the Apes blog. In that first podcast, we discussed how a materialist Darwinian worldview loses any objective standard of morality with which to criticize Hitler or anything else for that matter. In this second of two podcasts dealing with this controversy, I continue the conversation with Dr. Weikert about the moral and logical challenges involving evolutionary ethics. Let's turn now toward the idea of Darwinian ethics. The Philadelphia Inquirer concludes a column that attempts to, quote-unquote, sever the link between Darwin and Nazism, and it concludes it as follows, "But there are many ways to spin the moral influence of Darwin. Perhaps because of creating chaos, it might be helping us construct a more informed and less rigid morality. Darwin himself wrote that violence, selfishness, charity, and goodwill are all part of human nature. He hoped we would choose to act on the better parts." Why can't morality and ethics, say, coincide with Darwinian evolution?
It depends on how you're going to frame this whole argument, but there are many Darwinists, including E.O. Wilson and Michael Ruse. Michael Ruse is a very prominent philosopher of biology. E.O. Wilson is the founder of sociobiology, a Harvard biologist. They argued in an article that morality is, quote, "an illusion fobbed off on us by our genes to get us to cooperate." Now, of course, that's not how all biologists construct this notion of ethics, but that is a very prominent idea within Darwinian circles, and certainly does seem to reflect Darwin's own view in The Descent of Man, where he talks about the evolution of morality. But if morality is simply an evolved trait that helps us cooperate, then it doesn't have any objective kind of existence, and in fact, it changes over time also. So there is no fixed morality of any kind, and it's not universal. Darwin even thought that it could apply in different ways to different racial groupings or whatever. I mean, there's no reason that it would have to be the same everywhere. So what you've basically done, if you believe in the evolution of morality, and I'm not saying that all Darwinists believe in the evolution of morality, but there are large segments that do. If you believe in the evolution of morality, then there is no fixed morality of any kind. So when Faye Flam talks about choosing the better traits, she doesn't have a leg to stand on because there's no way to arbitrate which are better. It's just whatever causes you to survive. If brutality causes you to survive, then that's, quote, the better trait. If you want to use that word, well, the better is not even a good term there. It's just the trait that survives. It's just the trait you get. So if brutality helps you to survive and reproduce, then that's the trait that's going to be selected for. If, on the other hand, altruism helps you survive and reproduce better, then that's the trait that'll come. But there's no way to arbitrate between those two things. And in fact, in human society, obviously, we have both. We have violence, and we have kindness. We have warfare, and we have people coming together to help one another. But Darwinism can't say that one of those is better than the other. All it can say is that's what exists. So there's no way to arbitrate between those things.
Under this concept of evolutionary morality, could morality differentiate between every individual, or would it have to differentiate between groups, or could it be either, or are there different theories on that?
Well, that's very interesting, too, because let me go to Darwin himself, because Darwin himself, in The Descent of Man, where he's talking about the evolution of morality, says something very interesting, and that is that he believes under ancient conditions where primitive humans were first developing morality, that morality developed through natural selection. And here's what he says. He says that tribes were competing against each other, and those tribes that had the most selflessness, loyalty, courage, and other kinds of traits that are altruistic would outcompete their neighboring tribes because of those traits. And so ultimately, morality developed by killing off your competitors, killing off the other tribes that didn't have those moral traits. So this is a very interesting feature of the way that evolutionary ethics have to emerge, according to Darwin's own account, is that the way that morality emerges is by ultimately destroying your competitors.
If a Darwinian doesn't want to assert that morality evolved, how would they explain it?
Well, there are those, for example, who, say, in the Catholic Church would like to hold a dualistic perspective still and could argue that God allowed humans to evolve physically, but then endowed them with a spirit or soul at some point, specially created a soul for a human being, and that then would give humans moral significance and the ability to make moral choices and other kinds of things like that. But then what you're doing is you're sort of separating out these two elements of human nature, that is the physical part and the spiritual part. Of course, most Darwinists don't find that compelling at all, and so most of them, including Darwin himself, rejected the idea that there's any separate kind of morality or any kind of dualistic human nature. They wanted to argue that it all came from the evolutionary process, including the morality itself.
So if you concede and you don't try this dual kind of approach, you're stuck with the idea that morality evolved, and then it undercuts the idea of being able to have an objective morality. Is that correct?
That's correct, although, again, there are some Darwinists, especially theistic evolutionists, that I think would want to claim that Darwinism does somehow move toward some goal, which in that case they're getting into a teleological kind of evolution, which again is not what Darwinism per se is about. Darwinism per se is typically non-teleological. There's no purpose, no goal-directed thing. So at that point, I don't see how you can get any kind of fixed morality because it's just whatever exists at any given time. And Darwin himself, just to give one example, said that if humans had been raised in the same way that bees were, that killing our siblings and killing our offspring, would be how we would act. That would be our behaviors because that's what would have been selected for. So Darwin himself realized that morality was not some fixed entity with any objectivity to it.
Would that imply that morality could still be evolving, that there is no objective morality right now, and that in the future we might decide, say, to get rid of people, as you had mentioned earlier, as some have advocated, getting rid of the helpless, getting rid of the elderly, and that would just be a new kind of evolved reality?
Well, yeah, that is one of the problems, that, yes, the morality is still changing, and so if someone comes along like Hitler who has a different morality than most other people, let's say, there's nothing to say that his isn't going to survive and reproduce and become the morality of the future. The only way to figure out is just to wait in time and see which morality beats out the other moralities. So, yeah, you're right. I mean, morality is still changing and still in flux according to this evolutionary view of ethics.
Faye Flam, the author in the Philadelphia Inquirer's Planet of the Apes evolutionary blog, concludes one of her recent articles saying, if our lives really did hinge on countless accidents, couldn't that notion make life ever more precious? What's wrong with that approach that she shares with people like Richard Dawkins?
Well, the word precious she uses there, of course, implies that life has some kind of meaning or purpose or value. And if it's all by accident, which she's stating in that question, they're framing that question, if it's all by accident, then there's nothing to give it any kind of meaning or purpose or value or preciousness. Our life, human life, would be no more precious than any a lump of coal or any other kind of inanimate object that you could conceive of, or a carbon atom, or there'd be no more preciousness there than anything else in the universe. Everything else in the universe, after all, is a product of chance processes as well. So I see it as sort of a non sequitur.
Do you think that Darwinists tend to follow a traditional view of morality? Do you think that that undercuts their own argument? Why do you think they do that if they view life as purposeless?
Well, there's two different ways that Darwinists, I think, can go with this. I'm talking here about naturalistic Darwinists here, too. I'm not talking about theistic evolutionists who want
right.
to put a dualistic spin on it or something. I'm talking about here naturalistic Darwinists. There's sort of two ways they can go. They can either say, well, that's just the instincts I have that have been grown up with evolution. I have that morality, so that's just what I have to live with. That's one kind of possibility. Or you could live just inconsistently with your own worldview by just saying that, you know, I'm going to follow this morality whether or not it comports with my worldview as a whole. The first approach I find very disconcerting because essentially they are saying that all of these moral impulses that I have, there's no knowledge behind it. There's no objectivity to it. There's nothing behind that. But that's just how I act. But then, once again, that gives them no reason to condemn anyone in the world, no matter how horrible or atrocious their behavior is, because after all, that's just their evolutionary instincts. So there's really no criterion that they can have. There's no moral fulcrum they have to be able to say that Hitler was wrong. And I've talked to a number of Darwinists who have admitted to me point blank that they cannot say that Hitler was wrong and Hitler was evil. In fact, one guy I was talking to at a San Diego State University conference on Darwinism, when I found out he believed in evolutionary ethics, I was talking with him. And finally, after hemming and hawing, he said, well, I don't like Hitler. But ultimately, he told me, well, Hitler was okay.
Really?
Yeah.
And that's because he didn't have an objective standard by which to judge him.
Correct. Yeah.
Frightening.
It's just his feelings against Hitler's feelings, and anyone's feelings are just what exists.
So then the only goodness in the Allied powers would have just been might makes right. We beat them.
Correct.
Chilling. Do you find that to be the big danger in terms of the spread of a Darwinian worldview, that people will lose grounding with ethics in general?
Well, yeah, I think it is a huge problem, and certainly it is already coming to roost. I mean, there's many people like Peter Singer out there who claim that he needs to unsanctify human life, in large part because he says Darwinism has already smashed the view that human life is special and sacred, and so I think we're seeing this being played out. In fact, Richard Dawkins likewise supports euthanasia and such based on his Darwinian worldview, because human life doesn't have any purpose or meaning, so it can be dispensed with in whatever ways we deem appropriate.
Dr. Richard Weikert, thanks so much for making the time.
Thanks for having me.
After this interview, the Philadelphia Inquirer Planet of the Apes author Faye Flam returned to the subject, asserting she had been spanked by creationists for accepting reality and being a Darwinist. The spanking Flam refers to is Dr. Weikert's rebuttal to her assertion that if life really is the result of countless chances, it is all the more precious. Dr. Weikert had countered that a naturalistic understanding of Darwinism cannot sustain the notion that life is precious, because everything, not just life, is the product of chance and would be equally valuable, making life no more precious than anything else in the cosmos. So in a manner of speaking, you could say that a spanking did take place. Spare the logic, spoil the science writer. Anyway, Flam also questioned why, quote, creationists label everyone who accepts current biology as a Darwinist. It's as if scientific knowledge equates to some kind of political ideology. We don't call physicists Einsteinists or astronomers Hubbleites. Of course, Evolution News and Views blog from the Discovery Institute has documented the use of the word Darwinist before, when previous critics have tried to assert that opponents of Darwinism created the term. Searches point to numerous positive uses of the term in Nature, Science, and even in the writings of Richard Dawkins. This subject was also covered in the Politically Incorrect Guide to Darwinism and Intelligent Design, which quoted Harvard sociobiologist Edward O. Wilson in a 2005 edition of Newsweek. In the magazine, Wilson asserted Darwinism was coined by enemies of Darwin to make him look bad. Quote, it's a rhetorical device to make evolution seem like a kind of bad faith, like Maoism. Scientists don't call it Darwinism. But the guide points out that doesn't hold up. It reads, yet according to the Oxford English Dictionary, Thomas Henry Huxley, Darwin's most famous defender in Britain, used Darwinism in 1864 to describe Charles Darwin's theory. In 1876, Harvard botanist Asa Gray, who despite their disagreement over whether evolution was guided, was Darwin's most ardent defender in America, published Darwiniana, Essays and Reviews Pertaining to Darwinism. And in 1889, Natural Selection's co-discoverer, Alfred Russel Wallace, published Darwinism, An Exposition of the Theory of Natural Selection. Two of Wilson's former Harvard colleagues, evolutionary biologists Ernst Mayr and Stephen Jay Gould, used the word extensively in their scientific writings, and recent science journals carry articles with titles such as Darwinism and Immunology and The Integration of Darwinism and Evolutionary Morphology. As you can hear from this brief excerpt from The Politically Incorrect Guide to Darwinism, this term is not an invention used by proponents of intelligent design, but has been around since Darwin himself. Discovery Institute's senior fellow Jay Richards came up with an equally valid answer. He said, for the same reason that Darwinists put Darwin fish on their car, but no one ever puts Einstein or Hubble fish on their car, Darwinism is much more like Freudianism, Marxism, and phrenology than it is like Newtonian physics or Hubble's evidence of a cosmic expansion. A better question for Flam and the readers of the Philadelphia Inquirer might be to ask why Flam and critics of the intelligent design movement insist on mischaracterizing proponents of intelligent design with the creationist label. Flam concludes with her view that, quote, our exploration of the universe tells us that we are the products of natural processes and chance. How can we progress in science if we throw out every finding that makes us struggle? Weikart seems to think we can decide what aspects of reality to accept. Of course, as you've heard, Weikart never asserted that we should throw out every finding that makes us struggle. He simply shared links that Darwinists find challenging and embarrassing and would prefer to throw out. Flam concludes by linking to a video of Comedy Central's The Daily Show, in which a Republican strategist is tricked into saying, about science, it should be up to the American people to decide what is true.
The corruption of our children happens every day, right under our noses.
It's very confusing for a child to be only taught evolution, to go home to a household where their parents say, well, wait a minute. You know, God created the earth.
What is the point of teaching children facts if it's just going to confuse them?
It confuses the children when they go home. We as Americans, we are paying tax dollars for our children to be educated. Mm-hmm. We need to offer them every theory that's out there. It's all about choice. It's all about freedom.
I mean, it should be up to the American people to decide what's true.
Absolutely. Doesn't it make common sense?
It's a funny but misleading piece, and ironically, it applies not to Dr. Weikart, but to his critics. After all, Flam asserts Weikart is wrong in saying that a materialist Darwinian worldview removes an objective moral standard with which one could criticize Hitler because, quote, we, as humans, we endow life with meaning and purpose. Now, isn't that the same as the punchline in The Daily Show, that it should be up to the American people to decide what is true? Only with the slight modification that it should be up to the Darwinists to decide what is true. I hope you've enjoyed this podcast from the Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. For more information, or if you'd like to support the Discovery Institute, please visit discovery.org/CSC.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.